It's deja vu all over again. The Beacon is back on WCPT 820.
By the way.
Yes, and I'm Brian Hawkins. And how does it feel, Lenny? We're living on the air again.
Oh my gosh. You know what? It feels great. And I have to tell you, I listened to our tribute show last week for Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really awesome. And you know, it really struck me, and I we're gonna kinda keep Bill alive on the air with us, but it really struck me how majestic he sounded in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
Because the last few years he's been so sick, and his voice got weaker, and you know, his mind was so overcome with illness, and you know, we were able to kind of get through the shows, but listening to shows like from the beginning of time, I had forgotten how just tremendous he was, how magnificent he was.
Right, how much energy he had.
Oh, yeah, and he just quick. I mean, just quick-witted and funny, and so it was really nice to sort of take that trip down memory lane, and I don't know about you, but it really kind of revived my love for this show and what we're doing here.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I think we're like kind of back with a renewed energy, and we're ready to go, and
yeah,
I don't know.
I feel it too. I told you last week when we knew we were going to do the show again, I said that I got scared, and not because I couldn't do the show or didn't know what to do, but because that electricity was flowing through me again. And for the first time in a long time, you know, you just feel like you have an opportunity to do something special. And there's so many things that you can do that, you know, you just get those butterflies in your stomach.
Right. Like that fire was reinvigorated.
Yeah.
And we were just talking outside the studios. Like, I just want this show to succeed so much. And because I think we, you know, because of Bill's illness, and I think that we just sort of, you know, we were kind of got complete. Not Bill. Bill didn't. Bill was always, this was his baby. He lived for this show. But I don't know. I mean, I think for myself personally, like the segment I do, the Let Us Turn Up the Beat, I was just sort of getting by with it. And, you know, and it's just, I feel reinvigorated. And I think that we want to do good for Bill. And this show serves so much purpose. I mean, again, listening to the tributes on the air, people really were affected by what we did on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to carry on that legacy and continue to affect change and promote positive, positive situations and experiences for people who are blind, visually impaired, and people with disabilities in general, I think is a huge honor for us to be able to carry that on. So we're here, we're back, we're excited, and we're going to start our first show with Brian and I and Sandy and Brett. And Brian, who do we have on today?
Well, we're going to start with a board member for the Lighthouse, Larry Broutman. Now, I talked with him earlier this year about a coffee table book. I think this is a coffee table book. I have a copy here. Chicago Monumental.
It looks beautiful.
Right.
I mean, the cover is really spectacular.
Right. And what he did, he went around Chicago and he documented information about all the monuments. Not all of them. Maybe he left out a few, but I think he's going to do a second book. We talked about that in the interview. But it has the history of many of the monuments in Chicago, and he's got them categorized into the explorers, the heroes, and also the law and the lawless. So he did that. And the thing about it is, this coming week, this book will be in Target stores, and you'll be able to purchase it. And the proceeds will go to the Lighthouse, all 39 programs that we have here. And
I don't think I realized that.
Yeah. So it's a nice book. If you like history, if you like Chicago, if you like coffee, or if you don't, even if you don't have a table, this book is something I think you'd probably want to pick up. And not only that, but besides the book, next week as well in Target stores, the Lighthouse has designer clocks. that people can purchase for their kitchen, their home, and even for children. They have nice little designs on them. And
they're made at the Lighthouse.
They're made at the Lighthouse.
That's the piece I was missing, because on our our breakdown for this week, it says Target's going to start selling designer clocks. And I was like, well, that's nice, good. But how does that relate to, you know, blind and visually impaired? It makes sense to me now.
Right.
And that's very thrilling, actually.
Right. And the proceeds will go, it gets even deeper than that.
What?
They're available on Amazon. Anyway, we're going to have somebody in the next couple of weeks to talk about the designer clocks, but Larry Broutman's going to be on the show. Then, this is sad. Of course, with all the hurricanes, you know, when the first hurricane hit in Houston not too long ago, my first thought was, well, what's happening with the people who have disabilities, who are visually impaired, blind? How are they getting along? Sandra went and called FEMA. And believe it or not, they have a disability integration and coordination office.
I'm so happy to hear that. I would hope they would. Mm-hmm. I would hope they would. I think that it would be tremendously remiss for a giant relief organization to not have a division that does focus on people with disabilities. At the same time, it's very much a relief that that is in place.
Right. And so she talked with Linda Mastradrina, I think is her name.
Wow.
So she talks about emergency preparedness. So, I don't know, sit down, have a cup of coffee, strap yourself in. I sound like Hawk Harrelson now.
It's all right.
And enjoy the beacon. We'll be back with more on WCPT 820.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because like they collaborate with each other and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people so, you know, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it, because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, you know. And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things, because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers. And they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. So every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
Chicago is known around the world as the birthplace of a skyscraper and other magnificent buildings. What's not talked about as much, but just as notable, are the memorials, the monuments, the fountains, and architectural landmarks that adorn the city of Chicago. Larry Broutman, researcher, engineer, photographer, world traveler, Hall of Famer, I'm going to ask you about that, and a board member of the Chicago Lighthouse, is here to tell us about Chicago Monumental. It's his new book, and it shines a light on Chicago's monuments. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Now, I'm a person, like many people, who walk around the city of Chicago, and we see all these magnificent sculptures, but we don't know the stories behind them. So this book is something that I've had a lot of fun looking at over the last few days. And what made you decide to put it together?
Well, I think your comment is very appropriate, because a lot of people that live in the city and a lot of people that come to visit the city will see the monuments, because they're all over the city, particularly in the downtown, you know, near north area, along the parks and so on. But very few people really stop to look at them. And I decided that, therefore, it would be beneficial to research the monuments out, and I had been doing that for a number of years, and tell their story. And in that way, also, some of the stories of Chicago can also be told. The history, for example, because these monuments go back to the 1860s, actually. Mm-hmm. So it was a combination of things, and I also felt as I was going along with the book that these monuments and the parks that many of them are located in really dramatize and glorify the city, so that the beauty of the city. And Chicago is an incredibly beautiful city, probably one of the most beautiful in the country, really stand out. And I felt the book would be a good tribute for that purpose, to really dramatize the beauty of Chicago.
And approximately how many monuments and fountains and all of those things would you say are in the city?
Approximately, there's over 200. These, and when I say 200 monuments, the book really emphasizes historic monuments. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do a general book on public art. Now, these monuments are considered public art. But to cover all the public art in the city, for example, the Picasso statue downtown, etc., I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make this more special, and hence I decided that I was really going to concentrate on typically pre-1920s monuments, and there are plenty of them in the city.
And what are some of your favorite monuments in the city that you saw?
Well, tough question. I love so many of them. I think probably the one in my mind that stands out the most is one in Jackson Park, and that is called the Republic. It's probably, in my mind, I would have to say it's my favorite because of its pure beauty. Again, I don't know how many people have seen it, but it's approximately 25 feet high in gilded gold, covering over bronze. It's just an absolutely beautiful statue with an incredible history. So that's probably my favorite statue or monument. But there are others, like the Balboa Monument, mm-hmm. All of the Lincoln monuments, which are amazing monuments, seven of them throughout the city. It's really hard to distinguish them beyond on that, because they're all so good.
Why do you think Chicago sort of gravitates towards creating these monuments? What do we as citizens get from it?
I think this goes back again to the early, relatively early days of Chicago. When I say that, I mean really the 1850s and beyond. Chicago was basically became a city in 1833. But I think that the most prominent fact is really the fact that the Columbian Exposition, the World's Fair of 1893, was held here. And even though monuments were being created in the city prior to that, the greatest number really occurred as a result of the Columbian Exposition. And the Columbian Exposition, which are also called noted for being the White City, white because the buildings were all white, that brought incredible number of sculptors to the city in order to prepare the sculptures for the exposition. And the sculptures were basically artistic in nature. Some of them were memorials, but many of them were just artistic expressions of the sculptors. This kind of led, to answer your question more specifically, to the development, because of the sculptors that then resided in Chicago and became associated with the Art Institute of Chicago, developed into a more, let's say, commemorative statues. And that probably began with Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And so once the Abraham Lincoln monuments, some of them, the one in Lincoln Park and the one in Grant Park, were sculpted and placed, I think this promoted the concept of commemorative statues. And so many famous Chicagoans, famous Americans, have been basically memorialized by incredible sculptors.
I mean, it's such, as you mentioned before, such rich history. Names like Alan Pinkerton I've heard of before, but I wasn't aware that there was a statue or a memorial to him here in Chicago. So right. you find that out, and then you read about that individual. Stephen A. Douglas, Ulysses Grant, all of these individuals.
Well, you know, a lot of the commemorative statues of that kind, many of them are Civil War related, like, as you're pointing out, Ulysses Grant, and of course in the same era, Stephen Douglas. And I don't even know if it's a handful of people that I have come across that even know that there's a Stephen Douglas Memorial Park on the south side of Chicago, and that there's this... Right, and that there's this incredible, that's where he is buried. His tomb is there with probably 100 foot, at least 100 foot high monument, which he is on top of, at least the sculpture of him. So we have all these wonderful tributes and monuments, as you've just pointed out. And again, I think they're underviewed. That was another reason to do the book.
And there's only, unfortunately, one woman who has a sculpture in the city.
Right. There aren't. That's a really good point. And you know, I really sought for, as I was closing out the book, to do my best to ensure that I had covered all of the monuments and statues in the city. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure that that's accurate. In my next book, by the way, which is based on solely cemetery monuments, I was able to include Jane Byrne, because Jane Byrne, the first woman mayor of the city of Chicago, while she doesn't have a monument, at least she has, I photographed her gravestone or headstone in the cemetery. But that's a little bit different, but nevertheless, you're right that there aren't many tributes to women. I think that Jane Hull was Jane Addams is included in the book.
It's just not a work of love. There's a special benefit that goes along with the book, because you're donating the proceeds to charity, specifically the Lighthouse.
Yes, I am on the board of the Lighthouse, and all of the. This is the second book that I have published. All of the author's proceeds, which are my, you know, royalties and proceeds, are being donated to the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind, and also to another organization that benefits people with disabilities, and that's Access Living. So the more books we sell, the more money that these organizations will get through the sale of the books, and I'm really happy about that.
And where can we get the book?
The books are easily available. For example, both my first book and this book are available on Amazon.com. They're also available in virtually every bookstore in the city of Chicago, and in some cases even gift shops. So the book is quite readily available. And these days, I suppose people like to buy them off of Amazon. It's easy. But any local bookstore in the city, and there aren't that many of them left, but we'll have them.
And for folks with sight, there is a special section, a 3D section. Are you planning to do second edition?
It's not exactly a second edition, but I suppose it can be viewed that way, because the book that is now in the hands of my designer, and by the way, I want to mention that, you know, the book, I did, of course, all the photography and the text, but if it weren't for my designer, she just turned this book into a beautiful book. She's a world-class designer. And so the next book, which she's also in the process right now of designing, which is called Chicago Eternal, as I mentioned a little earlier, is really concentrating on monuments at cemeteries.
Right.
And in fact, you mentioned some of them already. Places like Graceland Cemetery and Rose Hill Cemetery, Graceland Cemeteries, where Alan Pinkerton is buried along with all of his family and most of the agents that lived in the 1860s and 70s. You know, they're just, oh gosh, incredible places with respect to the beauty of the monuments at these cemeteries. And it really, walking through that, for example, Graceland Cemetery is like walking through also the history of the city in terms of the people that built the city in the 1800s and early 1900s. So it's going to be a really interesting book as well.
I mentioned before Hall of Famer in plastics.
Yes.
And I did not know there was a Plastics Hall of Fame. What did you do to...
Probably not too many people do unless you're in the plastics plastics industry, but all of my engineering education was at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I believe I was the first person to graduate, and that was in 1963 with my doctorate degree in the field of plastics engineering. That was the first degree they had ever given in that field. So my professional engineering field is in plastics and in the development of the material, in the properties of the material. And so I've been involved in the industry since 1963, basically. I did a lot of research. I was on the faculty of IIT in Chicago, mm-hmm. and taught the plastics courses, and led a team of researchers. So I was fortunate enough to have really good people from all over the world working for me as graduate assistants and so on. We published a lot of technical papers and books, and I was honored 4 or 5 years ago. There is a Plastics Hall of Fame. There's about, I think, roughly maybe 50 living members in it in the world, and I'm blessed and honored to be one of those.
Well, I'm in rare company today. Thank you very much, Larry Broutman, for coming in and talking about Chicago Monumental. It's a book that you can get on Amazon.com and also other stores.
Yes.
And so pick that up. And then, of course, part of the proceeds go to the Chicago Lighthouse and other charities. So it's a good deal, and you won't be sorry. It's an excellent book, something you can keep around and refer to, and you'll be able to fill in a lot of blanks about Chicago that you probably have been wondering about but didn't really have the information or the inclination to go and actually do the research. It's all done by Larry.
Thank you very much.
Come in September, the Lighthouse is the place to be. This September, the Job Club. presented by Maureen Reed, Job Placement Counselor. We'll feature 12 different topics over 12 weeks on preparing yourself to enter the job market. Job seekers, especially those with a visual impairment, come September 14th. Stop on by from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Chicago Lighthouse, 1850 West Roosevelt Road. It's the place to be for the Job Club. Today,
I am doing fantastic. And yourself?
I cannot complain at all. Well, and you know, Brett, moving on now, we've all heard about, you know, the unfortunate, very unfortunate natural disasters going on. We've had Hurricane Harvey in Texas, then Hurricane Irma in Florida, and most recently, Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. And, you know, we've had the earthquake in Mexico. And I know personally for me, Brett, this makes me think, you know, are we prepared for emergencies?
Yep. And I know that you got to speak with somebody from FEMA.
Yeah. So I spoke with Linda Mastandrea, who is from the Office of Disability Integration and Coordination at FEMA. And she shares great information on how to prepare for emergencies as people with disabilities, because, you know, we have different challenges and concerns we should be worrying about.
Most definitely. And that title is a mouthful. Congratulations on getting all the way through it. That was quite good. Why don't we get into it and take a listen? What do you think?
Let's take a listen. You know, a lot of us don't think about emergency preparedness, but to talk today more about the different preparations that people with disabilities can do before, during, and after an emergency is Linda Mastandrea from the FEMA. She is part of the Office of Disability Integration and Coordination program at FEMA. Linda, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Great.
Glad to be here.
Wonderful. Well, Linda, I know that, you know, we often see about the different emergency preparations, like, you know, have a emergency plan, a kit, you know, that might include water, batteries, non-perishable food. But, you know, people with disabilities, I think that we have much more to consider than just the everyday things.
Absolutely. For people with disabilities, I think being prepared in advance of a disaster or emergency is vital and really necessary to, you know, to sustain your life. Thinking about things like for a wheelchair user, for example, you might need to think about, you know, if it's a manual wheelchair, do you have extra tires or tubes, things like that. For a power wheelchair user, for sure, you need to make sure that you have your battery charged up and you have additional power sources or your charger or your plug, you know, those kind of things. Many people with disabilities use service animals, and thinking about supplies for your service animal, if you have to evacuate or go to a shelter. So thinking about their food and their dishes, and if your animal uses any medications, things like that. So making sure your service animal is supplied. But I think part of the thing that people with disabilities really need to think about is planning in advance. You know, when a disaster is happening, it's too late. So you really need to be thinking in advance. What do I need if I need to evacuate, number one? What do I need if I'm stuck at home for 3 or 5 days without power or water or things like that? You know, because these are the very real consequences of hurricanes like Maria that's hitting Puerto Rico, you know, as we speak.
What other considerations should people with, you know, maybe sensory disabilities take into consideration?
Sure. So I think, you know, it's really important for individuals, let's say, if an individual is deaf, or let's say they use a cochlear implant or they're hard of hearing and wear hearing aids, wanting to have, you know, that equipment with you, wanting to have any batteries or backups with you or, you know, or available. And sometimes it's, you know, it's hard to think about those things in the rush of the moment, and that's why it's important to get in front of it and plan in advance. Mm-hmm. For people with a visual disability who are blind, you know, whether there's particular assistive technology that individual is using, a magnifier of some sort, if they have a Braille reader, for sure, you know, all of us, virtually all of us, right, have smartphones or some mm-hmm. kind of a cell phone, and you're going to want to make sure you have that available and your batteries and chargers and things. So, and if individuals use things like, you know, a cane, whether that's an individual who is blind or an individual who's using a different type of cane, you know, for a mobility impairment, making sure, again, that you have that equipment ready to go. Sure. Because I think, again, in the heat of an emergency, people aren't often thinking about what they're going to need to take with them. Get into a shelter environment, right? Mm-hmm. Making sure that you have your assistive technology with you so that you can function in that environment for what may be, you know, weeks or perhaps even months, depending on the severity of the emergency that you're in, is going to be vital to your health and safety.
Yeah, and thanks for mentioning the shelters, because I know that FEMA is, you know, works to make shelters accessible for people.
So FEMA itself does not provide sheltering, mm-hmm. But we provide guidance for the organizations like the American Red Cross that do provide the sheltering operations. Mm-hmm. And the guidance that we've put out, which is called Functional Needs Support Services, or FNSS guidance, that basically helps shelter managers and operators understand how to integrate people with disabilities into what's known as a general population shelter. So in other words, a shelter where anyone in an affected community can go. Because the idea is that shelters should be integrated and people with and without disabilities should be able to go to the same shelters and receive access to the services of the shelter. And so the FNSS guidance that FEMA developed basically, again, assists shelter managers with understanding everything from shelter layout, you know, accessible cots, understanding accessible wayfinding, how not to put barriers in the way of individuals who might use canes for mobility, mm-hmm. Also, you know, information for shelter staff on how to communicate with individuals with disabilities, how to have large print and other visual aids available for, you know, for emergency communications or registration information. So basically the guidance touches everything from, you know, the parking lot or the, you know, the transportation drop-off all the way through all of the services in a shelter that someone might expect to get, whether that's food or showers or sleeping.
Mm-hmm. You have the disaster recovery centers.
So disaster recovery centers are something that are stood up in the recovery phase of a disaster. So, for example, you know, with Hurricanes Harvey and Irma that recently touched Florida and Texas and that area of the country, FEMA is on the ground there, disaster recovery centers are opened. Mm-hmm. And what a disaster recovery center does is it serves as a point of contact for an individual who's been affected to come in and talk to the various program offices within FEMA to either register for assistance, to inquire about their application, to appeal if they're denied assistance, to talk to the Small Business Administration about a loan. So you can do all of those kinds of things at a disaster recovery center. And on staff, generally, at a disaster recovery center, we will have what are called disability integration advisors, and those individuals support all of the various program areas within FEMA to ensure that people with disabilities who come into a disaster recovery center have access to effective communication, that any disability and medical-related needs are funneled to the appropriate people within the disaster recovery center, and to provide support that way.
in those centers, do you provide any form of accessible equipment like TTYs or any of those facilities?
That's a great question. Yes. So every disaster recovery center has a whole suite of accessible communication technology. We have everything from CapTel phones to various types of magnifiers, an iPad with a Z5 for video remote interpreting. We have various kinds of hearing magnification devices, amplified phones, large button phones, braille key phones, a variety of equipment like that. We also have picture boards for an individual who may not be verbal, and a whiteboard for somebody to write notes if that's their preferred method of communication. So there is really a full suite of accessible technology available to assist people to communicate their needs in a disaster recovery center.
Now, Linda, how can people find out more about, preparing for emergencies as individuals with disabilities or get information about FEMA?
That's a great question. So there's a few different places to get information. Number one, to get information on FEMA generally, you can go to FEMA.gov, so FEMA.gov. Currently on that site, there's a page specific to Hurricanes Irma and Harvey that people can click on, mm-hmm. and there's resources specific to those disasters that people can link to and find out more about. Also on that page, there's a link to about 30 videos that are captioned and sign language interpreted mm-hmm. that give a lot of information about different FEMA programs and services that are linked to on that page. Additionally, a couple of other places where folks can get information, if they're actively recovering, so they're in an affected area that was hit by a disaster, they can go to disasterassistance.gov, mm-hmm. and there they can actually register online to receive assistance. So you don't even have to go into a disaster recovery center. You can do it right online, mm-hmm. and they can find out more information right there about what to do. In order to register. Now, in terms of general planning and preparedness, getting ready, right, so having your plan in place, figuring out what you need to do, a great site to look at is called ready.gov, ReadyGov. And that site gives a lot of different information on the kinds of things you need to be thinking about and planning for in the event of an emergency or disaster, and the kind of, items you might want to have in what we like to call a go bag, right? Mm-hmm. So that's your bag of supplies that are ready to go with you if you have to evacuate. It also gives some tips and tricks on what you might need to think about stocking in your home if you need to stay in place for 3 or 5 days before help can get to you.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Great. Well, that was Linda Mastandrea from FEMA's Office of Disability Integration and Coordination. We'll be right back.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul Computer Information Systems and a master's in Business Information Technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. They want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans. Get employment, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word, I'll say awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Exercise is hard. So is maintaining a healthy diet. Of course, neither is half as hard as dying. Sadly, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and stroke kill nearly a million people a year. Even sadder, most of these deaths are preventable with a few lifestyle changes, including regular activity, healthier eating, and not smoking. Talk to your doctor about your risk for type 2 diabetes and heart disease. And if your doctor recommends lifestyle changes or medication, listen. The reason so many die is because not enough are willing to change. You can stop it, starting right now. It's your life. Listen to your doctor. Eat better. Get moving. Visit checkupamerica.org or call 1-800-DIABETES. A message from the American Diabetes Association.
Welcome back to the Beacon. What about the summer weather?
Well, for a week at least, just a couple of days.
Gosh.
I think it's going to get colder.
It will eventually, but I'm like, I've had all my cute fall dresses and boots ready to go, and I'm like, well, everything's on hold now. I guess I'm getting back in my summer clothes.
Yeah.
I know. We're programmed to complain, aren't we?
Well, yeah, I don't like winter, and that's been well documented. So.
It's coming. Winter is coming.
What I do like,
yes,
is when people listen to the show, the Beacon, and now they can do that. You know, I wanted to say this earlier. I want to thank the people because every week, and we were off the air for a few months. Don't know how many because we can't count.
Right. We have no clue.
And people called, sent emails, and we did a survey every year for Chris Radio, which is a reading service for the blind. We do a survey and talk to people to find out how they like the service. And one of the things they said, what happened to the Beacon?
Really?
Yes.
So when we think that we're not necessarily affecting change, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
We actually are. And so being back on WCPT, because when we were off CPT, we were just doing podcasts through Chris Radio that were then posted on the website.
Now,
yeah.
You did not know. If you have a smartphone, if you download the TuneIn app.
TuneIn app.
Search for Chris Chicago.
C-R-I-S.
Yes. You can get Chris Radio.
Really?
Yes. And if you go to the local section for Chicago, all the radio stations, FM, AM.
They're all there.
Chris Radio's there.
Including us.
Yes.
So we're there with the big boys.
You have your choice. And also you can go to chicagolighthouse.org/radio. There's the podcast button and the listen live. It just starts up with radio.
It's seamless.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to download anything. It doesn't take time to buffer. I mean, it's just, you just click it and it starts right there.
Yep.
So I guess our point is you can listen to us on WCPT at 7 a.m. on Saturday mornings, as you are doing currently.
Right.
There is a rebroadcast of this show on Chris Radio's website on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's chicagolighthouse.com/radio.
Mm-hmm.
And we will also be posting the show as a podcast. So mm-hmm. It will be there forever.
I think you said it best. You can't get away from us.
You
we'll chase you out.
We will find you.
And so all of that is happening. But you know, I've done something that I'm kind of proud of. I wonder what you
do
think.
Do tell. I don't know.
Well, you know, working in radio. Would you call me a nerd? A radio?
You are a radio
I'm
nerd.
A radio nerd. I spend a lot of time doing that. And so a lot of times I don't have time to go and get food, you know, cooking and that kind of thing. And
it's so
a real,
cute.
It's a real big thing for lunch. But what I did was I found a place that makes the meals for you. And that's what I do now. And I go and I get, and it's a raw meal.
Is it Vegan Garden?
No.
What service do you use?
Raw Chicago.
Really? Do they deliver it? Or is it like
if
a meal service?
If you pay them, but I usually go and pick it up.
Where do you go?
They have two locations, 51 West Huron, I think, and there's one at in the French Market.
River North, of course. That makes sense. Right. It sounds like a very River North thing to do.
All right. And I had a meal yesterday, and it was delicious.
Really? I'll have to try them out.
And I had a big muffin. It was like a real heavy, dense muffin, cranberry muffin, and I ate it. It's kept me full and energetic for the entire morning.
That's fantastic. I am proud of you.
Yes.
I'm very proud of you. I think that is a wonderful thing to do. And I'm a big advocate of the meal services because I don't cook. And as much as I harp about health and natural eating, when I'm home, I just will eat whatever I can find in my pantry and just shove it in my face. So I like these services that provide. The ones that I tend to subscribe to are the meal services that provide the ingredients and then you cook them. But I was asking about Vegan Garden because they will actually have the meals ready for you and then deliver the meals ready to just be warmed up. And I'm a little on the fence about it because I'm not sure about like rewarming food that's been made, you know, several days ago. But I'll have to give, what is it, Raw Chicago?
Yeah,
I'll have to give them a try.
Raw. So, but raw food, it's still considered raw as long as you don't heat at above 118 degrees.
Right, yes. Right. So you can get a little bit of, you know, put it in the oven for a little bit, but ultimately, right.
But
yes,
that's only for the week. On the weekend, I'm still looking for recipes and things to make for myself. So this is a perfect opportunity for you
to let us turn up the beat.
Exactly.
Boy, you know, you're taking over as Segway King, I think, because Bill, he was the master of Segways, and you just got two in there that were just like smooth as butter.
So I learned from the master.
Yes, you did. So today we're talking about turmeric. I don't know if I've talked about turmeric on the show yet, but I came across a video a couple of days ago and all the tremendous health benefits that that turmeric provides. My sister-in-law is actually from Sudan, and so she knows where to get like the real good stuff. I actually have a funny story. She brought me some turmeric from Sudan, and I was making some lentil soup with it, and the soup was beautiful. Like, the turmeric is just this gorgeous yellow like the sun color. So I was making some lentil soup with it, and it got to the point where I was going to put it in the blender to kind of puree it. And so I only have a NutriBullet, which I love because it purees anything. So I put my boiling hot lentil soup into my NutriBullet and I turned it on and it exploded.
Yeah.
The heat like pressurized it and it exploded everywhere. I had sun-colored lentil soup all over the white walls in my kitchen. It was such a mess and such a disaster. And it just stained my walls. And fortunately, it faded over time. So like by the time I moved out of that place, the walls were pretty much like, unless you were really looking for it, you couldn't see it. But the moral of that story is don't put boiling hot lentil turmeric soup in your NutriBullet because it will explode. So anyway, aside from that little faux pas, turmeric actually has tremendous health benefits. It's an anti-inflammatory. It's actually been proved. These are scientific proof. So this isn't like snake oil or, you know, hey, this is today's hottest trend. This is scientific evidence that turmeric actually has very, very powerful medicinal properties. So it is an anti-inflammatory. It also does have anti-cancerous properties in it. It's an antioxidant, and so that, you know, helps to prevent cancer as well. It does improve brain function and lowers risk of brain diseases, and also lowers heart diseases. So it's got a tremendous range of health benefits. I love turmeric. Not everybody loves it. It's got a very earthy flavor. But if you just, it's one of those things where you can just kind of sprinkle it on things and not even really know it's there, but your body will reap the benefits of it. You really just need a teaspoon or two a day on an ongoing basis to get sort of the health benefits that it does provide. So with that said, there is a golden milk. Have you heard of golden milk?
No.
It's a drink with it's basically turmeric and coconut milk. And then you put a little coconut oil in there and ginger and a couple of peppercorns, because peppercorns actually helps the body to absorb the turmeric. So you're getting more of the health benefits that it provides. So you kind of boil all of it together at the end of, you know, at the end of the day, and it helps with sleep as well. And once it's boiled, you filter it through a colander and you drink it. It's like a hot tea. So it's turmeric, it's coconut milk, or you can use any milk you want, but coconut milk and turmeric tend to pair well together. Ginger, peppercorns, and then a little bit of a sweetener of your choice. And that will help with, you know, anti-inflammatory. I mean, a lot of people will reap that benefit immediately. And if you drink it right before you go to sleep, then you should be sleeping well as well.
All right, I'm going to try that tonight.
I am too, actually. Mm-hmm. I am too. I just came across this a couple of days ago and was like, I'm going to give it a shot. So we'll see. We'll report back and let you know if it really works or not.
I probably will. All
right. So that's it for this week's Let Us Turn Up the Beat.
And a good job it is.
Thank you.
Golden Milk.
Golden Milk.
This is WCPT 820. You're listening to The Beacon.
Today, the unemployment rate for veterans is at an all-time high, and these brave men and women need our help. To meet this challenge, Paralyzed Veterans of America created Operation PAVE, an employment assistance program for any veteran at the Hines VA in Chicago. Through a partnership with Agility DGS, these services are provided free of charge. Hiring more veterans is great for business and great for our nation. To learn more, visit OperationPAVE.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Well, it's not Chicago's laboratory or the Argonne laboratory. It's Luke's laboratory. And he's here with information about assistive technology each week. Good morning. How are you, Luke?
This morning, very hot.
I would imagine you have some hot item that you'd like to talk about
nice.
This morning, huh?
Yes, I certainly have. I've got a hot product called Aira to talk about today. So let me tell you a little bit about that. I actually saw this at the CSUN conference in California in 2015, I believe, when they were just starting to get it going. And I thought it was pretty interesting then, and now it's kind of moving more into full gear. What this is basically a pair of smart glasses. So it's glasses that have a computer built into them. And they have a camera on them, and they also have some headphones on them as well. And the idea behind this product is that a user with a visual impairment who needs assistance with anything, pretty much, can use the glasses to connect wirelessly to an Aira representative. And these are trained individuals who go through quite a rigorous training process from what I understand. And they're able to see the user on a Google map, so they can see their position. And they can also see through the user's the camera on the user's smart glasses. And the idea is that if there's anything that the user needs to know about, then the representative is able to help them with it. So one of the big things is navigation. People who are blind might find it difficult to get around, you know, the city or whatever it might be. And so if they do happen to get lost, or if they just want a bit of information on what's around them, they can connect to an Aira representative, and the Aira representative is able to talk to them and see through the camera on the glasses and see where they are on a map and give them directions or tell them what's around them or whatever it might be. So that would be one example of how to use this device. You could also just do things like, if you want to read something, you can look toward it and the camera on the glasses would be able to see it and the Aira representative would be able to read it to you. Or if you needed help identifying products in a store, they would be able to help you identify those products. Pretty much anything. Your imagination is the only limitation. You know, it's like having an extra set of eyes, basically, on hand whenever you need it. So this product has been really popular. A lot of people have been thinking about the applications and realizing that there's a lot that you could do with it. And I think for some people, it's going to be a really big aid.
All right, that's neat.
Yeah.
All right, folks, here it is, the feature within the feature.
Customer of the week. So today we're going to talk about Alexandra. She was a girl that I saw recently, 6 years old. She had a congenital eye condition, and her parents brought her in. They wanted to have a look at some technology, which, you know, help her as she moves forward through school and things like that. But the reason that I particularly liked this customer was that she was very concerned about how long it was going to take us to do all of this. And I asked her parents, you know, why that was. And her parents said that she loved school so much that she hated having to miss any of it. And she really wanted to get back there as quickly as possible. So,
wow.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yes, that breaks your heart.
Yeah, it really does, yeah.
All right, well, if you'd like to be customer of the week, all you have to do is come in and sit down with Luke and try out some technology that you might be interested in, and people can make an appointment with you. How?
Call 312-997-3649. Email luke@scriven@chicagolighthouse.org.
Well, he's Luke Scriven. I'm Brian Hawkins. You've been in Luke's laboratory. We'll be back next week with more information on assistive technology. This is the Lighthouse Beacon.
This is Coach Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to support my friends at the Chicago Lighthouse, who are providing critical educational services to children who are blind, visually impaired, or multi-disabled. Through its innovative preschool, Birth to Three, and other cutting-edge programs, the Lighthouse is making a big difference in the lives of these children.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. These are exciting times here at the Chicago Lighthouse. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. To find out how you can help, call 312-997-3675 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
To help support its vital services for people of all ages who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans, the Chicago Lighthouse North in Glenview will host its fifth annual charity golf tournament on Monday, October 2nd. This exciting fundraiser featuring Chicago Blackhawk alumni will take place at the acclaimed Evanston Golf Club, 4401 Dempster Street in Skokie. An added attraction will be a stirring rendition of the national anthem from Chicago sports icon Wayne Mesmer. We'll also have a hole-in-one challenge for a brand new Subaru, courtesy of Evanston Subaru. For more information, call 312-447-3448. That's 312-447-3448. Or visit chicagolighthouse.org/event/golf.
That is going to do it for us. My mom's actually in town from California.
Oh.
Yes, and we're seeing Hamilton tonight. So
Is that a play?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, that's the hip hop.
Oh, God, Brian Hawkins, I'm not going to talk to you for 3 days for that.
Okay, well, tell me how it is.
I will. I will report back. So, yes, we're seeing Hamilton, the hip hop musical. And, so mom's in town. So it's good. So thank you very much for listening to us. Many thanks to Sandy Murillo and Brett Shishkoff for all they contribute to the show. And, of course, to Janet Schlick, who has kept us on the air for all these years. That's it. Have a great week.